massive injuries to break down coming out of week 14. The Jets somehow become the team to officially put an end to the coping corner. And finally, and most importantly, who are the running backs you need to pick up heading into your fantasy football playoff run? All that and more coming up on the week 15 People's Panic Meter. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, December 12th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, coming off a fantastic Sunday. We're decompressing here on Monday morning. Joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on? What's going on is the Chicago Bears are the hottest team in professional football right now, Matt Harmon. I'm excited about that. They've begun, not on every network, but some networks now, including the Bears in the hunt column of the playoff chase in the NFC. So you can feel Bears fever around here. It's something. And we don't have to stress about winning because the Panthers are taking care of the first overall pick. So these are good times. This is as good as I have felt as a Bears fan since, man, heading into that Eagles playoff game that didn't go so well years ago with Mitch, Nagy. I don't know. It's been a while. I'm feeling good.
I mean, I'm happy for you, buddy. you don't even really have to do the, all right, since week 7, the Bears defense in this success rate metric or this EP. It's like, no, this is just like, looks like a good defense over the course of the season now from like a season long number standpoint, yeah, which is really good. That's awesome to see. The Montez Sweat trade. You can complain about the contract they gave him and giving up a pick to do it, but it's going pretty well from an on-field product standpoint. And yeah, I love what you said, that typically this is the time of year when as a fan, you have to put yourself in a brain pretzel, right? Where it's like, I hate that they're winning. Like, this is not good. But thanks to the Carolina Panthers and Bryce Young, like, you don't have to worry about any of that, man. Like, that team is moonwalking to the number one overall pick. It's a great time to be a Bears fan.
Yeah. I saw somewhere that the Bears now have like a 95% probability of getting the first overall pick. And I can't even wrap my head around that other 5%. I don't know what that path is. I can't imagine the Panthers like winning a couple games. No, that's absolutely not happening. So yeah, it's kind of exciting.
Someone who may or may not be Thomas Brown, Panthers offensive coordinator, either his like fiance or his wife or something like that, allegedly tweeted that, We're only calling plays because nobody else wants to do it. Like that's the state of the Carolina Panthers right now, something to that degree. So yeah, I think you're pretty good. That 5% probably not gonna come to pass. Look, we have important stuff to get into in the show, and you know, it's fancy playoffs, so you serious time, blah blah blah. But just humor Andy for 2 seconds. I have to ask you this question. Let's say the Bears continue on this little fever dream. You know, Justin Fields playing well. Matt Eberflus, I mean, you said in like week 4, he was done. He was toast. He's not coming back, and no Bears fans want him back. But with the way the defense is playing, I think Fields is, you know, he's shown some legit promise with DJ Moore. Like, what's your dream scenario here for the next month with the rest of the season? And then, like, what do you want to happen in the offseason?
Well, I think the dream scenario is actually that Justin Fields convinces everyone. And listen, he would have to be fundamentally different in the final month of the season. But the dream scenario is that everybody becomes convinced in this final month that we in fact do have our guy. I don't actually think it's an open question. And, you know, I haven't done like deep dives on the prospect class yet, but I imagine I'm going to be pretty impressed by one of these top couple quarterbacks. And
yeah,
you know, I still think it's more likely than not that the Bears keep the pick, draft a quarterback at the top. But I would love for Justin Fields to play out of his mind and for everybody unanimously to say at the end of the season, because I find him very likable. I would love to be able to say at the end of the season, oh, hey, we got our quarterback, in fact, and let's drop a couple spots and let's just get Marvin Harrison Jr. and let's go. You know, that's what I would love to be. I don't think it'll come to that, but that's actually my dream scenario.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you'd get like a outrageous haul.
Right? Yeah.
Like, for 2 years in a row, you'd get an outrageous haul for the number one overall pick, which is pretty exciting to think about. But either way, man, like Fields continues to play like this. I mean, people talk about like, oh, the Sam Darnold trade. Maybe that's a good building block for what the Bears could get for Justin Fields. Look, I know Justin Fields is not perfect, but like, you know, Sam Darnold was objectively one of the, if not the worst quarterback in the league during his time with the Jets. And like Justin Fields is not that. And they got a second and a fourth, I think, for Sam Darnold. So either way, it's a good time to be a Bears fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think this is just the you know, meathead Bears fan talking. I feel like Justin Fields has clearly established himself as an NFL starting quarterback, right? Like, I don't know where he really slots into. You know, I haven't done a real life ranks in terms of the starting quarterback hierarchy, but he clearly needs to be starting for a team. I don't see 32 better quarterbacks right now. Certainly more interesting quarterbacks. So. They do have a trade chip if it comes to that. But again, I would absolutely love, again, total dream scenario. I would love to become convinced by the end of the season that, man, everything is clicking, and the issues that we'd long identified have been resolved or are close to being resolved or have at least been addressed, right? And I do feel like you see a little bit of, you know, Justin Fields either getting the ball out quickly or just going, which is what we've sort of wanted all along, right? There's been a lot of that in the last few weeks. So it's all been good to see. But yeah, that's, I don't know. These are good times. The Bears are winning sometimes in really ugly fashion, but it's fun.
Well, their week 15 opponents, probably their hardest game left on the schedule. It's in Cleveland against the hottest quarterback in the NFL, Joe Flacco. So you've got that, but then Cardinals, Falcons, before you finish with the Packers in Green Bay in week 18. Like, there are some very winnable games on that schedule there, and some real spots where Justin Fields, I think, could prove himself. Like, going to Cleveland and beat that defense, I think that's a proving ground moment for Justin Fields. But all right, that's enough Bears talk. Let's get to the serious business that we have to get to today. And again, it's your fantasy playoff time. Like, if you've made it, congratulations. Shout out to you. If you haven't made it, look, this is still a great time to be playing DFS, prop bets, whatever you want to do. Like, stay engaged with the NFL, for God's sakes, and really just stay engaged with this podcast. That's really what we want you to do. We're going to cover the people's panic meter, all that stuff. We'll do waiver wire pickups. But first, unfortunately, again, sitting here on a Monday, I said morning earlier, it's afternoon. I definitely know what day and time and, you know, part of the calendar we're in for sure. I'm very aware of my surroundings. We're sitting here on a Monday. We do have some injuries to talk about, starting with a really crushing one. Chargers head coach Brandon Staley said that Justin Herbert suffered a fractured finger in his throwing hand in their loss to the Denver Broncos. A lot of people have already speculated at it that with where the Chargers are from an in-season perspective, this might be the last we've seen of Justin Herbert this year, which it really does feel like the final blow to a Chargers season that's been disappointing doesn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah, this is just a value killer, and I don't have anything. I don't have a good spin to put on this. I think fantasy at this point in the season is so. I'm mostly like, I'd love to be concerned with other people's teams, but every time we talk about a player, I think about where I have him and what I'm about to do. And like, I'm probably going to drop Justin Herbert in a couple of different leagues where I was, you know, banking on him either being like part of a platoon in the fantasy playoffs or in one league, a player that I was interested in for next year. But I mean, it's probably a drop now. I don't know if this is the sort of injury that he could even contemplate playing through if they were really competing for a division or something like that, but it certainly makes no sense to put a compromised Justin Herbert on the field for that team given its current circumstances. I can't imagine that's going to happen. But then we have to worry about the many other Chargers, at least two other Chargers who have been significant fantasy assets, and the overall picture for the offense is just plainly not the same, right? Like, I'm sorry to tie this to some players that we're going to be discussing later, but I don't know how you can't be panicked about Keenan Allen right now, right? Like, he's had this phenomenal season, a season that I don't know that anybody saw coming to this extent, and he still saw a bunch of targets this past week. But like, how can you play him? How can you play him on Thursday night? How can you play him with anybody other than Justin Herbert at quarterback?
Yeah, Easton Stick, backup quarterback, his best throw came to Quentin Johnston.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a pride that helps no one type of situation. Quentin Johnston getting a downfield target. I mean, Aiden O'Connell versus Easton Stick on Thursday night. Andy, am I skipping another Thursday game? I didn't watch that game live. I mean, we'll talk about some players from that game a little later on in our panic section. Again, another spoiler alert, but I did lay eyes on that game after the fact. I did not watch it at 8:30 Eastern, and I'm thinking my wife's going to be a happy camper for 2 weeks in a row because we'll be spending some quality time without Amazon on Thursday.
I will say maybe that's what that game needs, because without Harmon's eyeballs on it on Thursday night, there was actually a little bit of an offensive explosion, right? Like they hit the game total in sort the of. First half.
Explosion is a very, very, I mean, Zeke exploded for like 29 touch. How many total yards did he have on 29 touches? I mean, look, he's looking good, but I mean, come on, man, explosion.
Yeah, relative to expectations, it was an absolute supernova performance from the Patriots and Bailey Zappe, right? Like, it was a wild game. So it might be for the best if you don't watch it, and then perhaps we could get these teams to 40. No, I mean, there's just no chance. I mean, obviously the Raiders just got shut out by the Vikings. There's and O'Connell seems overmatched, and of course Stick is going to be overmatched. I don't know how many people actually knew who the backup quarterback was for the LA Chargers, but it's a DeLillo name. It's like a fictional name, right? Like I don't know. This is a wild one, and if you wanted to skip it, no one would blame you.
Well, listen, if I have to do my civic duty to get us a shootout on Thursday Night Football by not watching it, I think I can step up to the plate there. Obviously, we don't need to talk too much Chargers. Sounds like you might want to be talking about the Chargers later. And obviously, we'll be talking about the Chargers and the state of things. We'll have to force Austin Ekwo to talk about it into a microphone tomorrow. So we shall do all that. You mentioned that 3-0 barn burner victory the Vikings had over the Las Vegas Raiders. It came at a cost, actually, for two players. First, Justin Jefferson took a huge shot over the middle from Josh Dobbs on the second catch of the game for him. Was taken to the locker room pretty quickly. Ultimately, this ended up being a literal hospital ball because he went to the hospital on that outrageous throw from Josh Dobbs, who was benched. Unceremoniously benched, like Dobbs sanity. What a time to be alive. That feels like 1,000 years ago at this point. Nick Mullins, your boy Nick Mullins, Andy, is back in our lives. Jefferson's another guy that the Vikings are still in playoff contention. If the playoffs started today, they would be in the postseason.
Yeah,
but I mean Jefferson, it's like one thing after another. Do the Vikings? I'm really interested to see how the Vikings handle this one, Andy. Rest of season.
Yeah, really, really tough one if you'd held Justin Jefferson all that time on IR pending a late season surge when he returned and like this is what you get. Hope he's okay. It sounds like it was not a worst case scenario. He was able to travel back with the team. So that's a good sign. Don't know just yet exactly what this is looking like going forward. But man, talk about just a total Pyrrhic victory for Minnesota, right? They lose not only Jefferson, they lose Alexander Mattison. They have to bench their quarterback during the game. That's going to be a junior varsity roster moving forward probably at least for a week. I'd be surprised if Jefferson is able to play like in week 15, which is a brutal situation. And then again, on the other side, Josh Jacobs being lost with a Thursday night game coming up, almost no hope that he'd be able to go there. We don't see that too often, that somebody gets banged up on a Sunday and is able to come back for the Thursday nighter. So that's messy. Like, it's just, I don't really have anything good to say here either. And I don't, you know, we'll talk about Zamir White a little bit later in pickups, but it's kind of a half-hearted recommendation, right? It's a terrible offensive environment right now. The team context is awful. The quarterback is coming off a do nothing game, right? So there's not a lot of hope on either side here. I am a little bit happy for Dalton Del Don, though, who gets his boy Nick Mullins back at the same time that Brock Purdy is, you know, in the MVP conversation. So what a time for young Dalton.
Oh, I mean, shout out to Dalton. He didn't make it in the Survivor pool thing, but otherwise, it's just everything's coming up Triple D. So that's
I'm
great
sure
to see.
I'm sure he would trade this for however many million. What does Dalton Del Don need with another few million dollars? Not a big deal. Yeah. He wants Nick Mullins back in his fantasy life.
For sure. I mean, who has the bigger private jet between you and Dalton?
Oh, it's Dalton. Dalton's got a fleet. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that must be nice. I'm just here plucking along, hosting the podcast every day and driving a car like a normal person, taking, you know, flying in freaking coach. Meanwhile, Yahoo stalwarts Andy Behrens and Dalton Del Don just ripping up the ozone with their private jets. So that must be nice. Shout out to you guys for that. Yeah, you mentioned Josh Jacobs also left this game. Knee injury. what a costly game for so little scoring and so little juice to come out of it. But yeah, Jacobs is another guy. Again, the Raiders are going nowhere. I know Antonio Pierce wants to get him 100 yards rushing no matter what. That's the goal every single Sunday. But this is a guy who had contract dispute with the team. He's not on a long-term deal. What incentive? This is where we're starting to have these conversations here as we enter week 15, right? Like, what incentive does Josh Jacobs have to come back and get grinded into the dust for this Raiders team? On Thursday night, it would be a good matchup, but and even Zamir White, man, we'll talk Zamir White. We'll save the Zamir White conversation for the waivers and everything. But yeah, that's obviously an injury to know. For Jefferson, there are really good spots down the stretch for this Vikings team. Saturday game in Cincinnati against a Bengals defense that's been beatable. Detroit in week 16 on Christmas Eve. I mean, Detroit, hello. Yeah, that's a good spot. Yeah. Packers in week 17 and then Detroit again in week 18. So it's going to be a bummer if Justin Jefferson is not going to be a part of this. And my big question, Andy, like for guys like TJ Hockenson and guys like Jordan Addison. I mean, Jordan Addison hasn't had a big game in a long time. He's one of these guys where the season long stats, like right now, as we sit here, 713 yards, 7 touchdowns on 56 catches. Like, all right, that's a pretty solid rookie season. I don't think Jordan Addison is going to be a bad player or anything, but we haven't seen him again have like a big game, a true needle moving contest since that Packers win 24-10, where he had 7 catches, 82 yards. And the week before, obviously, he went off against the 49ers. So it's been a minute since we've seen real positive things out of this Vikings offense. And he's somebody I'd be like, all right, I'm probably not starting Jordan Addison in my fantasy playoffs.
Yeah, he's had a couple of near misses, but he just has not survived this, you know, between the absence of Kirk Cousins and the absence of Justin Jefferson, which, of course, Jefferson being on the field makes life easier for everybody. Just a really, really tough road for him. I'd be optimistic. Like the one thing making me optimistic about the Vikings is the fact that they're in the freaking playoffs, right? So they everybody should be motivated to the nightmare here would be more like the Raiders scenario where the playoffs aren't happening. And there's no obvious incentive for anybody who, you know, is not under contract, the following season to actually return. So, I'm hopeful that if Jefferson can play, he's gonna play and we're gonna see him again. And again, it just changes the math for everybody else in this offense.
Final injury note here.
Oof.
Yeah. And this one strikes at me personally. Like you said, we can sit here and pretend like, oh, all everyone else's fantasy teams, we really want to help you. This one stung.
I'm sincere about that in like week 8, but we get to week 15 and I care about the Barons portfolio at this point.
Well, there's quite a few of my teams that I don't have to care about in week 15 because they were crushed by Nico Collins re-injuring a calf issue that he missed a game with earlier this season against the Jets after just one catch for 13 yards. Later, CJ Stroud entered concussion protocol and left this game, and we were back to Davis Mills time. That doesn't feel good. Suddenly, out of nowhere, this wonderful Houston season suddenly seems like it's kind of on the brink here with these injuries. And I have a lot of thoughts about this, obviously. I will just say, Andy, this one actually might be on me. This one might be literally my fault. We had like a friend's dinner on Saturday night at the house. We hosted everybody. And, my friends are like, oh, you should say grace, before we all eat, kind of like, I'm like, and I'm, you know, being a sarcastic jackass. Everybody did the whole thing. And I'm like, I am extremely thankful for us all being gathered here today, but not as thankful as I am for Nico Collins and Brandon IU, because these guys are like all fantasy players and stuff like that. So I'm being a jackass about it. And what happens on Sunday, Nico Collins gets injured, you know, right away. And I lose multiple leagues because of it, lose a playoff spot in at least one or two. I think this one might be on me. I think I might have cursed Nico Collins. I also think I might need to go back to church because of this.
I think that's that's probably a given. This is just brutal, and you can't assume that Nico Collins is going to be again. We're having this conversation early on Monday afternoon. Nothing official just yet, but re-aggravating an injury like that, not good. CJ Stroud, of course, getting thrown into the concussion protocol in the same game, not good. Pretty bleak outlook now for that offense, because I'm not particularly interested in the running game if CJ Stroud isn't going to be able to go, and if we don't have these, you know, you could tell yourself a story about how the Texans could go on without Tank Dell, but I can't really tell myself the same story about the Texans looking at all like, you know, the best version of the Texans without Nico Collins and Tank Dell, two just irreplaceable essential players. I mean, we can name the other receivers on this roster, but that doesn't mean that they are the equivalent of, you know, there's nobody who does what Nico Collins can do, and there's nobody who does what Tank Dell can do. So like, fine, some targets are going to find John Mechie or Noah Brown or Robert Woods, but it's not going to be the same, even with Stroud back. So it's a pretty ugly scenario. And they have those, like, they've got a couple of matchups coming up with the Titans that everybody was just sort of licking their chops for, right? I added the defense because I wanted this end of season stretch here. And just none of it looks good right now.
New York Times playoff predictor right now gives the Texans a 41% chance to make the postseason. It's just very crowded in the AFC. Like, they're certainly not out of it. But look, if you wanted to know how good Tank Dell and Nico Collins have been this season, watch that Texans offense against a very good Jets defense. But like, it's nice when it's like, oh wow, Noah Brown pops up for a big game. Ooh, that's exciting when he's like the third or fourth receiver. When Robert Woods makes a couple clutch catches, like, ah, there's that veteran presence. Like, you know, even John Mechie's had a couple of moments this season, but then all of a sudden these are your guys, and we've got very Bryce Young Panthers vibes on what's going on with CJ Stroud. Like, I mean, that's where we're at. That's the argument that like, oh, Nico Collins was nobody before CJ Stroud arrived. Like, he's just elevating Tank Dell because, you know, he's a rookie too. That's not what this is. These guys were really good players that could go out and win matchups. And I just don't think Robert Woods at this point can go out and win one-on-one matchups. I don't think Noah Brown is capable of consistently winning one-on-one matchups like that. So it's difficult because, like you said, the Titans two times in the fantasy playoffs is just like, it's so golden. But, you know, Stroud might miss next week. And look, even when he's back, if Collins isn't out there, I think it's a pretty tough spot if you're relying on CJ Stroud as your QB1 in fantasy, which, again, for me personally, I was in at least two leagues.
Yeah, I'd kind of settled in with CJ Stroud as like a top six, top eight fantasy option in any given week, almost no matter what the matchup was. And that's clearly not in play anymore. I mean, these are like, I don't know, I've been a little bit of a, maybe not to the extent that you have been, but I've been a Nico Collins apologist going back to, you know, my days of having him on a roster in like a Big Ten only college fantasy league. I've always liked Nico Collins.
What?
That was I'm blanking on what year it was, but I had a team with like Isaiah Pacheco when he was not actually a very productive player at Rutgers, but you know, he was all kinds of fun. Nico Collins, and like, we used to do, I don't know, it was me and Kevin Kaduk and a handful of others, Adam Jacoby, a couple of Yahoo alums and Yahoo adjacent folks. Did a little Big Ten fantasy league, and I had Nico Collins on that. I loved Nico Collins. Didn't amount to much, whatever. I think I lost in the finals of that thing. Anyway, Nico Collins is a really good player, and Tank Dell's a really good player, and you can't just take him out and, you know, just plug the holes with randoms and expect that it's going to be okay. It is very much not going to be okay. And now I don't think you can start CJ. Even if CJ Stroud clears the protocol and is good to go in a great matchup, he's probably not going to rank top 12 for me, because the receivers are just too sketchy.
I'm still a little caught up on this Big Ten only fantasy league. I mean, there's been some exciting players coming out of the Big Ten. I'm not going to act like they're all Iowa, but on that note, like, did you have any Iowa players on this fantasy? Big Ten only fantasy league?
I did at various points. I'm trying to remember exactly what the era was, but I had a lot of Purdue. Weirdly, I may have had O'Connell on this team. I had to look back at it. But good, I definitely Lord. Had Pacheco. I definitely had Nico Collins. Yeah. And then I had, I don't know, nobody needs to hear these names. Some of the names are absolutely terrible. Some unfortunate Illinois players on that team, but I was pretty good until I think I got steamrolled in the finals. Anyway, it was a fun league for a little while.
James Coe famously over the offseason said, I Nico Collins, who Matt Harmon has a weird affinity for, think that was justified. That's a weird affinity right there. A weird affinity is Big Ten only fantasy league. So yeah, shout out to you on the Nico Collins love there. Yeah, it's a bummer, man. But it is what it is. All right, with that, let's move into the week 14, the post week 14 people's panic meter. Let's address the coping corner, Andy. Look, for one, I was thinking it was probably about time that we can move on from the coping corner segment, because we're going to introduce another segment next week that's kind of coping corner adjacent, but maybe a little bit more utility focused. The coping corner, I think it's, you know, we're even beyond coping at this point, right? Like, just, you've got a whole offseason to cope. Okay, go home. Yeah. You lose, players let you down, go lick your wounds in the offseason. Okay, but really, the decision was made with some authority that we're closing down the coping corner. Pollard's playground is closed for construction the rest of the season, when we put the Jets offense in the coping corner last week on the heels of the Diana Russini, Zach Blatt, Zach Wilson doesn't want to start or is hesitant to get back in there, that whole kerfuffle. We put the Jets offense in the coping corner. Well, Nate Hackett, you know, saddled up the boys and destroyed the Houston Texans. The Jets, eighth in EPA per play in week 14 on offense, second in dropback success rate behind only the Dallas Cowboys, second, a 50% passing success rate. The only two teams 50% or above in week 14, the New York Jets, the freaking Zach Wilson New York Jets is one of them. So I think that is a perfect way to say goodbye to the coping corner, as it became one of the best reverse jinxes here at the end of the season.
An all-timer. Yeah, an absolute all-timer.
An all-timer. But I think Zach Wilson and Nate Hackett and those guys being the one to officially close down the coping corner, it feels right.
Zach Wilson has, I believe it's a week 16 matchup with the Washington Commanders. Hanging out there in a bunch of like super flex leagues, in which I'm still alive. And like, I don't know, it's almost going to be difficult not to pull the trigger on a Zach Wilson ad right now. Cause like, he is the guy who gets to throw to Garrett Wilson. He looked fine. Man, the Commanders are so generous, and they're that defense that like deliberately got worse at the trade deadline. I don't know if I have the discipline to not add Zach Wilson.
I mean, I'm telling you what, man, if he's out there in at least one super flex league I'm thinking of, I'm emptying whatever's in the clip for Zach Wilson, which is a horrendous thing that I just said. But like, I added Bailey Zappi in that league and didn't even start him last week. But I started Drake London over him, because it was one of those, like, do you start the dusty quarterback or, you know, the mercurial kind of wide receiver three option? And I ended up I was so pissed from, you know, basically Thursday evening Thursday night to Sunday. And Drake London thankfully went out and did something. But yeah, you're in a lot of, like, look at the quarterback situation across the league right now. Yeah. Zach Wilson against the Commanders. Yeah, baby, sign me up.
Yeah. We don't really, in a panic meter show, we don't really have a path to talk about Drake London this week, but oh my God, what a game.
He famously, Falcons offense, the entire offense is in the coping corner. So if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, that's us. I forgot that was us. I'm glad that we are essentially putting the coping corner into the coping corner, because there is at least one player who is currently in the coping corner that I think I need to talk about.
All right, let's move into the week 14 performances that left us scratching our head, or, you know, maybe we think you might need to panic about these players heading into the fantasy postseason after what they did last week. Andy, you get us started.
Yeah. My first name is going to be, it's going to be a player that, I don't know, he's got every reason to not have been at his best in week 14, but man, that was not a standard issue Trevor Lawrence game. And I know that people have been, you know, people have been a little down on Trevor Lawrence at various points because he's had so many near misses, but I think he's more than passed the eye test all season, but he had some terrible moments against Cleveland, and that's a good defense, but we have to do the work of trying to separate. Wow, was that just a bad play by an individual, or was that good defense? And there were several, I thought, just bad throws from Trevor Lawrence. And again, he's dealing with what sure looked like a high ankle sprain, and a pretty significant one when it happened. Yeah. And it's a small miracle that he's playing, but he is playing. And, you know, he is he was one of the few starting quarterbacks who's actually left in the player pool, who, you know, we took top 12 and is more or less performed to close to that level. And I don't know, I've got some teams where I would like to be starting a healthy Trevor Lawrence, but now we have this combination of he's clearly limited to some extent. He's clearly compromised to some extent. And we got the Ravens defense coming up. Like, this is the thing that people had been yapping at us about all year, basically, was that, oh, they get to the, you know, they get to December and then they've got Cleveland and Baltimore back to back. I get it. He was fine for fantasy purposes against Cleveland, but a healthy Trevor Lawrence has a much better game than that. And now we get the Ravens defense, probably an even better unit. One that was just, you know, I mean, Matt Stafford just had a day in a wonderful game on both sides against the Ravens. So I suppose I can argue that they're beatable, but I'm not sure that this version of Trevor Lawrence is the guy who's going to beat them.
Yep. Pretty concerned about it. Got to be pretty concerned about it. His 20 points was he's been on a solid run since he posted 4.1 first game off the bye against San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, so it's not as if he crushed you in fantasy if you played him. You know, there have certainly been lesser Trevor Lawrence days, frustrating Trevor Lawrence days, but the three turnovers, the one where he's just clearly not on the same, Calvin Ridley's running an in-breaker and he throws it so far behind him. It's what are we doing? How are we making this mistake in week 14? That doesn't seem right. The inefficiency on the targets to Zay Jones and Calvin Ridley, brutal stuff. I mean, both these guys had double digit targets and you barely made a blink in the box score, you know, it was troubling. Kyle Hamilton, I noted this yesterday. He is, you know, it's not like a season ending injury, but he could play this week. It's an MCL sprain. He's a super important player to that defense. If he doesn't go, maybe that is. I mean, look, he was banged up in that game yesterday, and Matt Stafford, like you said, had a game against the Ravens. I think when you think about these two teams, though, the Rams and the Jaguars, the Rams have been solving problems and, you know, readjusting their offense from this zone run heavy team that it used to be to a duo manpower gap scheme under with Kyron Williams back there in the backfield, getting fifth round picks, obviously Puka Nacua, but even Davis Allen. I mean, Davis Allen making splash plays last week against the Ravens. I'm like, all right, if some offensive coach and quarterback combination is going to solve the Ravens defense, Matt Stafford, Sean McVay, that makes sense to me. I've seen nothing from this Jaguars team, even though I think Trevor Lawrence is playing fine, but Press Taylor has been a disaster, I think, as the offensive coordinator. Yeah. I don't think they can solve the problems that the Ravens are going to present them.
Yeah, no, it's funny you mentioned the target totals for the Jags receivers, because every Sunday and Monday when I'm writing the pickups column, one of the little searches that I always do is I just go through and I look at who the most targeted players were, and I could not believe Zay Jones popping up on that list. Not that Zay Jones doesn't earn targets, especially with Christian Kirk out, but he did almost nothing. Man, whatever it was, 29 receiving yards on a dozen targets is just
14 targets, five catches, 29 yards. And Ridley's not much better. 13 targets, 4 for 53. I mean, at least 35% catch rate for Zay Jones, 30.8% for Calvin Ridley. And some of that's receivers, but a lot of that is quarterback play. Should he even be out there? I don't know.
Yeah, credit to him for just never, ever missing a game at any level, right? That's a super important player trait. But, man, there is I should recuse myself from any conversation around C.J. Beathard. I really like C.J. Beathard. I don't know that Beathard would have been better than a whatever that was, 75%, 80% Trevor Lawrence. But, man, Trevor Lawrence did not look like himself, and I'm terrified of him heading into the Ravens matchup.
Yeah, I think Beathard is also dealing with like a little bit of an injury or something like that. So that maybe if he was fully healthy, we're not having this conversation. They just play him and like take the lump for 1 week. But it's not what happened. And it would definitely make me very nervous about playing any of these guys against the Ravens. But certainly if you're relying on Trevor Lawrence as a standalone quarterback one, that would make me nervous. What we just saw last week. I'll throw another one out there. DeAndre Swift, Eagles running back.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, I mean, his week two, 28 carries, 175 yards and a touchdown performance feels like a very, very distant memory. I wrote in my Care Don't Care recap columns, like the Eagles run game, I can't even call it like a ghost of its former self, because at least a ghost, you know, resembles what it wants. Like it's a dead representation of a former living person. Yeah, let me explain to you what a ghost is here in week 15. Like, and that's, this Eagles run game looks nothing, doesn't resemble anything like the unit from last season. It's one of the many kind of systemic, I think, issues within this Eagles offense and within this whole Eagles team that's making it not the same version that we saw last year as they made a run to the Super Bowl. But Swift has just become a guy that he plays 28 snaps, 51% in the loss against Dallas, 42% in the loss against San Francisco. He's gone from a guy that, like, is Swift a running back one rest of season to a guy that, you know, if I had him on a roster, I'd feel terrified to play him going into week 15, 16, 17.
Yeah. Clear cause to be concerned and perhaps to panic. He's kind of a polarizing player, right? Because there are still people within the fantasy industry who will talk about DeAndre Swift as if he's just like secretly LaDainian Tomlinson, right? Like he's just a perfect back. And I think he's a good player. He's one of these guys that, and you saw it in the blow up games earlier in the season. He was doing a lot of work before contact, and that's not like, you know, that's not pure luck. Like he also, he was a great yards before contact back in Detroit too. And some of that's him. That's not like all the offensive line. Right. But it is it's very difficult to separate individual performance from like team strengths and all that. And he has benefited from the fact that the Eagles O-line, especially in earlier weeks, was just an utterly dominant force. But again, some of that is his own skill, but it's a long way of saying that he's not often make something out of nothing, you know, two guys met me behind the line of scrimmage and yet DeAndre Swift came away with 3 or 4 yards, right? Like there are some guys who that's their specialty. And I don't know that that's Swift exactly. So he needs help along the way, I guess is what I'm saying. And now, in more difficult matchups where we can't just simply expect Philly's O-line to bulldoze everybody in front of him, and in a situation where it's really unfortunate for anybody with Swift on a roster, but that team kind of likes Kenny Gainwell. I'm not some huge Kenny Gainwell fan, but they play him a lot. He was the starter in week one, right? Like they thought that highly of him. So he's going to continue to play as long as he's healthy. So I definitely get the worry on Swift for sure. Also, he's no, like both running backs have the same situation where like they get into a goal line situation and we all know what's going to happen and it's not going to be them.
100%. I will say one silver lining with DeAndre Swift. You mentioned like tougher matchups. It's tough to trust this, you know, Eagles offensive line unit, like barreling teams over. Well, don't really have a tough matchup rest of the season, especially from a rushing perspective. They get the Seahawks on Monday Night Football. Hell of a flex there. We might get Drew Lock flexed into that game. Great job in Seattle. And the Seahawks are 30th in rushing success rate allowed since week 8, you know, back half of the season. So, and then they get the Giants twice as well. They get the Cardinals. So now that I'm sitting there looking at that, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm going to sit there and look at those matchups and be like, you know what? Playing DeAndre Swift sounds like a really good idea against those teams. But the results of the last 2 weeks give me some serious pause. And again, just where I think this Eagles team is right now, like, the version of the Seahawks, especially captained by Drew Lock, I would have thought that, okay, yeah, the Eagles can go in there and just handle their business and it's going to be fine. And maybe they do. But the Eagles team that we're watching right now, I don't think is just like a, you know, handle their business type of thing.
Right.
That makes me concerned.
Yeah, yeah. And again, the fact that we know what is going to happen when they get like inside the 2 or the 3 yard line, and we absolutely know that they're not really thinking about Gainwell or Swift is just a crushing problem, right? It keeps Jalen Hurts relevant even in games where he's not necessarily great. But man, it is brutal for that backfield.
All right, give me another name that you're a little perturbed by their week 14 performance.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull somebody out of the coping corner, and I just want to mention Tony Pollard, who is actually, you know, like I somehow have Tony Pollard on a couple of teams that I think are not just like playoff teams, but like probably favorites in those leagues, and Pollard is a part of them. And he's coming off a perfectly fine game. He had 7 catches. Like if you just look at the box score, it's fine. He didn't score, but it was in terms of total yardage, it was fine. Over 90 total yards. Good game. Healthy usage as a receiver. There was a lot of Rico Dowdle in this one, and it was, the snaps don't even seem that concerning, right? I feel like it was like a 70-30 split in terms of snaps, but Dowdle played early and he played a lot, and they fed him the ball, and the carries were nearly even between those
and
two.
And he was banged up at times during that game too, so like it could have been even more dramatic.
Yes. Yeah. He, I forget at what point in the game it was, but he was like down on one knee and had to come off the field. But then he came back either within that series or in the next series. I don't see this great gap between Rico Dowdle and Tony Pollard. I don't know. There have been people that have been calling for more Rico Dowdle all year. I think he's a perfectly fine player. I don't think he's obviously better than Tony Pollard at anything. But he did play a lot, and he got double digit touches in this thing, and that is a concern. He also took a touchdown from like the 1 or 2 inch line, basically something that Tony Pollard had set up. Like that's been unless you have Tony Pollard on a roster, maybe you don't notice this week in and week out, but he is setting people up all season. Like Tony Pollard's like, I don't know, best skill this year seems to be getting the ball to like the 6-inch mark, right? And setting up a score for either Jake Ferguson or Rico Dowdle or Dak Prescott or anybody other than Pollard himself. I shouldn't be complaining. He's coming off a 3-week streak of scoring a touchdown and being perfectly fine. He's got, you know, kind of a neutral matchup coming up with Buffalo in a really fun game. But I am concerned that this is going to develop into like a 60-40 thing. And we're no longer like the whole argument for to stick with Pollard has basically been, hey, that like this is the guy they're leaning on. They've been leaning on him all season. Look at the snap counts. Look at the red zone usage. And now I think Rico is a real threat to that.
I definitely think real threat to that. He's been a guy, I think Tony Pollard personally, that's been better with the less is more approach. I mean, and we see this with backs all the time, that you might get your best out of him when you're not asking him to do too much. Even played 78% of the snaps in week 13 in that win over the Seattle Seahawks, 3.4 yards per carry. Like a lot of these games where he's touching the ball maybe 15 times, that's probably the right ratio there for Tony Pollard. So, and look, like sometimes that 15, you know, that 15 touches, he's going to score a touchdown. Sometimes he's not. Mm-hmm. And doesn't it just feel, Andy, like he is going to be the type of guy that everybody remembers how it started, you know, where like some of the, not necessarily how it started because he scored 2 touchdowns on Monday Night Football, but like they're going to remember that long stretch where it was just really not fun to roster Tony Pollard.
Yeah.
And then there was this like kind of, okay, cool, all things are good. And then he like limps to the finish line. That seems like a fantasy season to me.
Yeah, it does in fact seem like it's going to be a limp to the finish line. Cause he doesn't really have like, he doesn't have a total green light matchup the rest of the way. This is clearly like, I don't know that it's a deliberate effort to get Dak Prescott the MVP, but certainly Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb are like the sort of beating heart of this offense right now. Right. And
as it is all,
sure. Yeah, absolutely. But it's not, you know, it's not the sort of scenario where like they're just absolutely building it around their centerpiece running back. And so he's going to have to luck into some situations where he gets a shot at the end zone. Cause he's certainly not guaranteed 20 touches in any game rest of season.
A guy who might be guaranteed 20 touches every single week, but it just has not happened the last two. Andy, talk to me about Zach Moss, buddy. I mean, the usage, the process, it was there. Like, what? Please, God, let me feed my family on usage. 94% snaps, obviously, against the Titans in week 13. 84% of the snaps in week 14 against the Cincinnati Bengals. He averages a combined 2.47 yards per carry. His six catches go for 34 yards. We're not even like, oh, well, it was a touchdown in there. Nope, no touchdown deodorant for Zach Moss. The rest of the games for the Colts, Steelers, Falcons, Raiders in week 17. Maybe JT is back by then, but it's not as if that Steelers or Falcons matchup is necessarily like a, oh boy, we can really get it going here. So, Andy, what do we say about Zach Moss? Because we were all gassed up about Zach Moss and the role with JT out, and the role has been there. The results have not been, but I mean, dude, you know how this stuff works. You, by the way, you all out there listening, you know how this works too. This is just the way things go.
Yeah.
He has this role. He does this twice. But what is stopping him from having like a 20-point game next week? Literally nothing. But nothing. What's stopping you for what is possibly, I mean, I'm sounding like a crazy person right now. What is making you feel comfortable putting him in your starting lineup in week 15?
Yeah, the story that you can tell yourself is based exclusively on opportunities, right? Because it was still 21 opportunities against Cincinnati, eight targets and 13 carries. And the prior week it was 22 opportunities. So like work is definitely coming his way. He is the guy who looked great early in the season for the first month of the season. Like he still gets credit for that. The matchup ahead is not particularly daunting against Pittsburgh. We just saw Zeke Elliott have a huge day on a ton of volume against Pittsburgh. So it's a beatable matchup, and that's the story that you can tell yourself. But it is not obviously about the recent production. Like a shocking lack of production over the last 2 weeks. It's crazy. We're like, I don't know, I feel like 10 days ago, all week, you know, I guessed it on a couple of podcasts. I do like a regular radio hit, and literally every show I was on, somebody was asking me if Zach Moss was a league winner. But they were asking it like, tell me why he's a league winner. like they were just assuming, you know? And this has been rough. Suddenly Buffalo era Zach Moss has reappeared. The matchups ahead are entirely beatable. If he makes it like to that Raiders matchup with the starting job, that's a great spot. So, I mean, if you're still alive in the playoffs, he's still going to rank. I don't know. He's going to rank inside the top 15 at the position for me, just because there's only so many guys that you can actually bank on getting 20 opportunities in any given week.
Yeah. And this is, if he like is another guy that limps to the finish line, it's just the most like fantasy football thing I can remember, because it's just like, he has this outrageous start to the season. And it's like, wow, this guy, unbelievable production with JT not out there. And then, you know, Taylor comes back and he has a couple of moments with Taylor in the mix. And then he gets completely wiped out of the, what a journey for Zach Moss, gets completely wiped out of the rotation there for a minute. And then like, oh boy, Zach Moss pre JT extension, he's back. And it's just like 28 yards against the Bengals, 28 yards on the ground against the Bengals. And definitely that game against Cincinnati. And I'm curious what it looks like. Again, another Saturday contest here with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am curious to see what it looks like there, because that offense in Cincinnati definitely felt like a, this looks like a team that's quarterbacked by Gardner Minshew. That's all there is to it. I don't know what to say about anything more than that. But all right, last couple ones from both of us here, Andy. Give me your final player that you're at least raising an eyebrow at after week 14.
Yeah, I don't know how it. I don't know how it isn't Keenan Allen. And this is, you know, no fault of his, amazing season. I think we all might have reasonably expected, Keenan Allen to have hit the decline phase by now, right? Aging player. But it's been an absolutely brilliant season. One of his best. Saw a dozen targets in week 14, but moving forward, we're now dealing with Easton Stick instead of Justin Herbert. And I'm not sure that, you know, double digit targets on a weekly basis are really going to matter. It seems crazy to not trust after the year that he has had and the number of, you know, man, we don't even think of Keenan Allen scoring touchdowns, but he's got like 7 receiving scores on the season. He's already at 1,200 yards. I mean, just absolutely brilliant year. Had a real shot to finish this season at like a crazy receiving total, 1,500 yards, 1,600 yards. I don't know. Probably not going to get there now. Nothing looks great for this. I don't know. Maybe I'm too doom and gloom about this, but man, the step down from Justin Herbert to Easton Stick is quite something. And I don't really know how Keenan Allen survives it fantasy wise.
I mean, it'd be one thing if Easton Stick was coming in there and this offense had looked good, but with Justin Herbert, but it hadn't, you know, and we've been talking about this for a long time now. Okay, Quentin Johnson gets one vertical route. Congratulations. Like, I don't think we're at all out of the woods yet with the Quentin Johnson stuff. I mean, maybe Josh Palmer comes back, but like, all right, okay. But it's not as if Easton Stick is coming in and taking over a loaded offense, or frankly, one that I think is very well coached. We can go back to and shoot all the Kellen Moore hype into the sun from this from this offseason. Haven't been impressed with what we're seeing there in Los Angeles. And I mean, even like Keenan Allen, the last 3 weeks had been slowing down anyways. I mean, the 14 catches against the Ravens went for 106 yards. That's great for your fantasy team, but like that is not a sustainable way to play NFL offense. 5 for 58 against the Patriots and then 6 for 68 against the Broncos. And it wasn't, again, it wasn't like the, like, oh, shoot, Justin Herbert loses and then the Broncos take that game over. They were getting kind of smoked in that game. So like we already should have had our alarm bells raised for Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler in this Chargers offense anyways. And I mean, I think just Easton Stick in there, just it puts an exclamation point on it. My final one is very obvious as well. I mean, it's got to be the Steelers. Look, I know the Steelers are not like mainstays of your fantasy football team, like a Keenan Allen type of player, but there are times you can talk yourself into starting George Pickens. There are times you can talk yourself into starting Deontay Johnson. These Steelers backs had been great fantasy assets. Well, your boy Mitch Trubisky, I mean, dragged them into the gutter on Thursday Night Football. Because yeah, Bailey Zappi definitely showed up to shoot the over on this one, but Mitch did his part. Mitch knew the assignment. We're taking this game under, and we're not moving the football. I mean, 5.4 yards per attempt for Mitch Trubisky, an interception. He somehow gets he runs in a touchdown. Great. He throws a touchdown to Deontay Johnson late in the game. Great. But the Steelers running backs, 12 carries, 29 yards for Najee Harris, 7 carries for 11 yards for Jalen Warren. And like, tell me why it's not going to look like that every week going forward. I mean, Steelers fans are have some shame, have some self-respect. They're calling for Mason Rudolph in the stands. Okay. Like that's where we're at with the Steelers. Again, have some freaking self-respect. I know Mitch is Mitch, but do you people not remember the Mason Rudolph years as well? But that's what people want after seeing, again, your boy Mitch play football for this team.
That was amazing to me. And I guess I didn't recognize the special relationship that must exist between Steelers fans and Mason Rudolph, but like the idea of a fan base chanting for Mason freaking Rudolph like early in a game was just wild to me, because you know how that goes. That's not like you're not going to get an extended run of excellent play from Mason Rudolph. That was wild. Absolutely wild. Can't believe it happened. And now we have like early in the week, we've already got Mike Tomlin talking about how, yeah, they're going to get Rudolph more like first team reps in practice. We'll make sure that he's in a better spot to be ready in case called upon. So you're basically telegraphing that, which is fine, right? That Mitch Trubisky has a very short leash, as he should. But it's just, I don't know. Plan B is such a bad plan. I'm with you on this. There's very little hope here. I do have a couple of places where I just have to play Deontay and hope that it goes for the best. I'm not overly tied to the rest of these guys, but I do have a fair amount of Deontay Johnson, and this is a bad situation.
Yeah, Colts matchup is great, too, because we know the secondary can be beat. We know you can run on them. They're one of the worst run defenses since week 8. They're 31st in rushing success rate allowed. Like, this, again, looks like a great matchup. But good Lord, like, you just watched what this Mitch Trubisky offense.
Yeah.
And how is Mason Rudolph even still on this roster? What are we doing here? Usually it's like disappointing day 2 quarterback takes a couple of like has a long extended run as a starter, which he did in 2019, and it didn't go well. It's just like, oh, he's still kicking around there. That was 4 years ago. 4 years ago, and like he's still on this roster. What are we doing? It's pretty outrageous. I'd feel very concerned about any Steelers players, again, even going into a pretty nice spot there against the Indianapolis Colts on Saturday. So
Right. By the way, and you tweeted about this during the game or after the game. What are we asking George Pickens to do now? Like, what was that collection of routes that George Pickens was running? That was wild. Like not that he should exclusively be a go route guy, but man, occasionally he's good at it.
Yeah. I mean, look, George Pickens remains the funniest player to talk about because like you can't, I guess, as I always say, you can't have a normal conversation about George Pickens, but dude,
we've reached the point where like he has a dedicated sideline camera, right? Like we're just looking for the reactions from George Pickens on the sidelines between series,
which I mean, again, can't have a normal conversation about George Pickens, but like he has to be the least pedigreed, least like he has the lightest resume for anybody that we're on like that type of watch for, right? It's like,
yeah,
all right, yeah, AJ Brown, is he gonna blow up on the sideline? It's like, okay, this is George Pickens, who is like a perfectly fine receiver, but the George Pickens stuff is so weird. I was at least glad Kirk Herbstreit noted that, like, he was, because again, I saw a few of the clips after the game, dogging on some of those plays too. I mean, just like given not giving a lot of effort, but then again, look at the effort they're giving to get him the ball like that. I pulled up the next gen stats route chart again just to look at it. It's the saddest NGS route chart in next gen history for sure. I mean, I don't even know what you want to call some of these like three of the exact same routes on the right sideline, the little drag route, pretty rough stuff. What a pathetic offense. I mean, just what a disgusting group of players there. All right. That'll be about enough. We're going to say goodbye to the Coping Corner, as I mentioned, but we will say hello to a new little mini series here on the People's Panic Meter, the Fantasy Forensic Files. As you all know, it's playoffs. There's always that one guy that carried you all season. Maybe we talked about him today. Carried you all season, is going to drop an absolute egg in the postseason and, be the one to cost you your season. So on Sunday night, Monday morning, during the fantasy postseason, we want to know who is the player that gets you eliminated, who is the one that drags you down to a defeat. You can send your submissions, send your screen grabs, your bad beats, whatever, to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Vent about it. Honestly, like, let it rip, okay? This person disappointed you, let you down. Go crazy. Like, get after it, all right? We want to hear how upset you are. We'll break it down. We'll talk about why it happened. You know, we'll open up our little forensic kit here. You can tweet at us too. Andy Behrens, Matt Harmon, _BYB on Twitter. You can send us, if that's easier than email. Again, like, get funny about this stuff. Really air your grievances. And we will, again, open the forensic kit, investigate why and how this all happened.
Yeah, I hate to, I hate to demand that people create the content for us, but man, what a I really do want some videos. I really do want some voice memos hitting us in reaction to elimination games.
Absolutely. We need that. And yes, it's week 15, man. Create a little content for us, okay? You guys have done great all season sending submissions into the mailbag. So you've been awesome. But look, this is a reciprocal relationship. You give a little bit, we give a lot, we all win, we all have a great time here to end the 2023 NFL season. Let's wrap this podcast up, Andy, with your top five waiver picks of the week. Usually I just have you run through the list, but these are actually some pretty interesting names. So I'm going to have you take it one by one here, starting with number five, Jake Browning.
Yeah, I'll start with Jake Browning. And of course, depending on your immediate situation, Jake Browning might be the most might be the most important ad of the week. So he's five on my list, but maybe that's just a reflection of what I happen to need. These last two games have been phenomenal. And in his, like, he wasn't as good, I don't think, in week 14 as he was the prior week, which was just like eye-openingly, jarringly good against Jacksonville. But these last two games, he's completed about 82% of his throws, over 600 yards, five combined touchdowns. The rushing touchdowns aren't really, like, we're not banking on that. They've been like 1 yard scores, whatever, but five combined touchdowns. The team is putting up points. it's, I guess it's a reminder that, like, you know, this is the guy who gets to work with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, and that is a pretty good way to make a living, and it's still a functional offense. He's been quite good. And then you look at the matchups ahead. Minnesota is pretty frisky defensively, honestly, but Jake Browning is beating everybody you put in front of him right now. So it's Minnesota, it's Pittsburgh, it's Kansas City. It's not great, but man, I'm going to talk myself into Jake Browning in a couple of places, because again, he's been wonderful these last 2 weeks. And like, the receivers at his disposal are unlike those that we find on almost any other team.
Yeah. I love the way Browning's playing. And I said yesterday, I give a lot of credit to Zach Taylor and that coaching staff. Yes, like, they're having him go under center, screen passes, stuff that they just don't do with Joe Burrow, probably because Joe Burrow doesn't want to do them. And look, if Joe Burrow doesn't want to do it, you don't do it. He's an elite quarterback, and you'd rather have the elite quarterback than doing all this stuff. But big testament to that team and Browning that he's been able to execute that assignment. Your number four player here is Zamir White. He fits the profile theoretically of the, like, quote league winner backup running back stash, right? But do you have any concern, Andy? Because I have this concern that, like, he was obviously a Josh McDaniels, Dave Ziegler pick. Yeah. And, you know, maybe, like, did they fantasize about starting him over Josh Jacobs? I think that's possibly true. You know, Zamir White, that's going to end up being our guy. And the way that Antonio Pierce and these guys just, like, wiped out everything, that, like, all the mistakes of the Josh McDaniels era, that makes me a little concerned that, like, oh, is he going to get the Josh Jacobs workload? But they do want to run the ball there.
Yeah, they do want to run the ball. I am not convinced that he just slides right into what Josh Jacobs was doing. I'm not even convinced that he's good by NFL standards, right? He is somebody who has had some really nice moments in the preseason, and then they just put him back in the holster in the regular season. Like, he's not, whether that's a case of what he's earned or it's just a case of what Josh Jacobs himself has earned. Like, Josh Jacobs is a really difficult player to pull off the field. I get that. So we just haven't seen enough Zamir White to feel particularly confident. I stuck him at four here. I think, you know, he might be stepping into the largest workload, but I just think there's a pretty wide range of outcomes here. It's not a bad matchup with the Chargers on deck, but then it's Kansas City beyond that. Then it's the Colts. If he is somehow the lead back, you know, going into championship week, it's the Colts, and that's a pretty friendly matchup. I'd like it. Zamir White was a good player at Georgia, not super efficient, anything like that, but he was a touchdown scorer on a great team. Again, we don't, like, as you and I are speaking right now, we don't know how long Josh Jacobs is going to be out, but it stands to reason that he's not going to play on Thursday night because this injury just happened. And it, you know, again, it's a team that should not be putting players at risk, and Josh Jacobs should not want to be put at risk at this point in his career at this exact moment. So I think we're going to see a bunch of Zamir White. Again, I don't have a read on whether that's going to be full workload. But he's probably of the three or four backs that I think are really interesting heading into this waiver period. He has a path to challenge for the highest touch total.
Second Bengal on the list here, number three, Chase Brown. The rhetoric around Chase Brown, Andy, has gone from, on the Monday night game, like, oh man, zero RB bros are going to punch each other to try to draft him next year, to like, oh man, never mind, Chase Brown's going to be a third round pick in fantasy football next year, to, dude, can you actually kind of start this guy going forward?
Yeah, I'm sure I got a million things wrong in the prospecting process heading into this season, but I could not believe that Chase Brown was not recognized as one of the best running backs in this rookie class. Like, I couldn't believe that. Where did he go? Like, the fifth round? That's crazy to me. Because he never missed last year in college at Illinois. You knew what was coming from the Illini. He absolutely never missed. He had 100 plus scrimmage yards in every game. He was great against the best defenses that he faced. Like, he was like 150 plus yards against Iowa and Michigan. He was outstanding. And you saw, like, in limited touches this last week, had the long touchdown reception on the screen that could have gone nowhere, but instead went 54 yards for a touchdown. He finishes with over 100 scrimmage yards on 11 touches. Like, that's just, I don't even think of Chase Brown as being, like, super fast or anything like that, but he actually hit the second highest sprint speed of the season, over 22 miles an hour on that screen. He's one of those rookies who sometimes we get one of these fresh leg stories at the end of a fantasy season, and he sure looks like that guy because he spent some time on IR earlier in the year. He just looks terrific right now. And if he's really settled into getting 10 plus touches each week for a competent offense, we're going to be flexing him.
Your final two guys here, Jerick McKinnon. I don't think we need to cover too much on, like, people know the deal with the Jerick McKinnon stuff, but Ty Chandler, your number one ranked player here. We didn't talk about Alexander Mattison in the injury section because I wanted to save the Ty Chandler discussion here for waivers. So this hasn't been a fruitful rushing game all season, really, Andy, but we know Ty Chandler theoretically has juice.
Yeah, he's popped a couple times this year. He scored a touchdown like a month ago, and he had that big game against Denver. Obviously, everybody has big games against Denver, but the Mattison injury really clears a path for Chandler to be almost an every snap full workload guy, and there's just not a lot of those going around. Had a quiet afternoon against the Raiders in a mostly quiet game, right? Only 3 points scored, but the guy's got 4.38 speed. You can see it on occasion when he gets a little head of steam, right? Like, it translates to the field. He had a pre-existing role that was sort of independent of any injury issue with Alexander Mattison too, right? He kind of stepped into that Cam Akers workload, which mm-hmm. was about a third of the snaps in that backfield. The matchup ahead is Cincinnati. And even though Zach Moss couldn't beat it, it has been a beatable matchup all year, right? They give up like 4.7, 4.8 yards per carry. They've been a bottom third run defense all year. They've been they've been at the bottom of the league against everything all year, basically. Not an overly talented defense. So this is a beatable matchup for him. And again, he's somebody who, of all the players on this list, I probably feel the most confident about. If he gets the starter's role, he's definitely getting 20 to 25 touches.
Yeah, definitely a chance that he could end up being that type of back for you. The matchups are great. A lot of green lights there. So it could be a big end of season run here for Ty Chandler. But Andy, hell of an end of season run for the coping corner, the panic meter, all this stuff. It's been a ride, buddy. And listen, I'm glad we at least got to give you 5 to 7 minutes of Bears victory lapping here in week 15.
I feel like we unintentionally did a lot of good for a lot of people in the coping corner, right? The fact that was just a springboard to success. As soon as you and I would finally give up on a player or an entire team, the fact that we could launch them to greatness, feel like we really provided a service.
Oh, there were a lot of times where people wanted me like to put, you know, Calvin Ridley in the coping corner or, you know, Jahan Dotson. I waited way too long to do that. I should have like green lighted these guys. I did not realize what we were doing with the coping corner.
Right. Right.
And it wasn't always right away. I mean, Ramondre took some time. Christian Watson took some time. You know, Tony Pollard, even it was kind of right away. He started scoring touchdowns. So, yeah. I wish we realized the power that we wielded earlier so that we could have used it to benefit ourselves.
Exactly.
Specifically. I mean, shoot. Should have put Allen Robinson in the coping corner. Maybe then he would have like a 10 touchdowns.
Just tested the limits of our power. Yeah, we should have done that. We definitely should have put Justin Herbert in there a week ago. That would have really helped me out.
Yeah, big missed opportunity by me personally. I'll take responsibility for that. That's going to do it for today's show. Tomorrow, Eckler's Edge is back. Obviously going to have a lot to talk about with Austin. You know, we'll talk about Justin Herbert. We'll talk about a bounce back performance from him as well. So you don't want to miss this one. Until then, we're out.